Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from Uncle John's Plunges Into Music and OnThisDay.com. Question number one, opus is a word commonly seen with a composer's works, such as Liszt, Opus 1. Why is that term not used in the plural? Is it A, this term is only used to identify the first work by a composer? Is it B, the plural of this term is opera, which would be confusing? Is it C, there is no plural form of this particular term? Or is it D, this term is confined to compositions that have a libretto? Opus, why no plural? And question number two, it was on this very day in 1958 that Jerry Lee Lewis took out a full-page ad in Billboard magazine. Why did he do that? Was it A, to explain about his second divorce and his third marriage to his 14-year-old cousin? Was it B, to promote his candidacy for an elected office? Was it C, to announce the release of his newest album? Or was it D, to publicly declare bankruptcy? Jerry Lee Lewis, 1958, full-page ad. Why? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 9th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1865 that Richard Wagner's opera about doomed lovers, Tristan and Isolde, premiered in Munich, Germany. 1865? Today. And it was 53 years ago today, 1970, that an honorary doctorate in music was given to Bob Dylan by Princeton University. 1970, today.
Já senti que vai passar por mim. Seu tempo vai passar também. Melhor assim, os dois ficam sem ninguém. Vamos ver quem vai sofrer. Pena que sei que ele vai de vez. Não dê, pois ele é mesmo demais. Qualquer coisa não posso esquecer. Se me arrepender, o que é que eu vou fazer?
Astrid singing the Brazilian song Vai de Vez introduces this special transitions article. It's titled Astrid Gilberto, the girl from Ipanema singer, dies at 83. This is published in BBC.com, Mark Savage, June 6th. 2023. Astrud Gilberto, the Brazilian bossa nova singer best known from The Girl from Ipanema, has died. One of Brazil's biggest stars of the 1960s and 70s, she recorded 16 albums and worked with artists ranging from Quincy Jones to George Michael. Her version of The Girl from Ipanema sold more than 5 million copies and helped to popularize bossa nova. Sofia Gilberto, the artist's granddaughter, broke the news of her death on Instagram. I'm here to bring you the sad news that my grandmother became a star today and is next to my grandfather, Joam Gilberto, wrote Sofia, who is also a musician. She was a pioneer and the best. At the age of 22, she gave voice to the English version of Girl from Ipanema and gained international fame. Astrud moved to Rio de Janeiro at an early age and took musical inspiration from her mother's side of the family, where almost everyone played an instrument. In her mid-teens, she fell in with a group of young people she described as a musical clan, whose members included the famous singer Nera Leal and proclaimed guitarist Geo Gilberto, who helped create Bossa Nova. Astrud and Jaub married a few months after meeting, and it was their relationship that accidentally gave rise to her recording career. In 1963, she accompanied her husband to New York to help him as a studio translator while he cut an album with jazz legend Stan Getz. When the band came to record the English lyrics for The Girl from Ipanema, they needed a vocalist, and Gilberto shyly suggested she could handle the task. Producer Creed Taylor said he wanted to get the song done right away and looked around the room. Engineer Phil Ramone told Jazz Wax in 2012, Astrud volunteered, saying she could sing in English. Creed said, great. Astrud wasn't a professional singer, but she was the only victim sitting there that night. Although she had little time to prepare, Gilberto's detached but sultry vocals perfectly captured the vibe of a tall and tan and lung and lonely lovely girl who turns the heads of everyone she passes. The song was an instant hit, went on to win the Grammy Award for Record of the Year. Gilberto wasn't credited on the track, which was released under the name Stan Getz and Joab Gilberto, and she only received the standard $120 session fee for her performance. However, it was the springboard for a successful solo career. Beginning with 1965, the Astrud Gilberto album, on which she teamed up with incomparable jazz guitarist Antonio Carlos Jobim on a suite of Brazilian standards. The article skips down and ends with this. Brazil turned her back on her, her son told The Independent. She achieved fame abroad at a time when this was considered treasonous by the press. In Europe, she recorded an album of samba classics with James Last, and George Michael sought her out to duet on a version of Desafinado for charity album Red Hot in Rio in 1996. She recorded her final album, Jungle, in 2002, after which she announced an indefinite hiatus from public performance, having previously said that being close to the public was frightening. The singer devoted most of her later years to campaigning against animal cruelty, but the legacy of her first recording lived on, with everyone from Frank Sinatra and Madonna to Amy Winehouse and Nat King Cole offering their own interpretations of Gilberto's performance.
Put on my jeans, my favorite shirt, pull up my boots and hit the dirt. Finally doing something I've dreamed of for years. Don't know quite what to expect. A little scared, but what the heck. My desire is always greater than my fear.
Dolly Parton's Big Dreams and Faded Jeans introduces our country music news. It's titled Dolly Parton Blasts Politicians Without Naming Any. Call it Dollitics. This is written by Maria Luisa Paul on the 17th of May, 2023 in the Washington Post. While criticizing all politicians in a new song could play as both sides-ism from other celebrities, coming from Dolly Parton, it represents authentic frustration, experts said. She doesn't reveal her personal politics in an overt way, whether that is backing a particular candidate or party, Lager said. But what she does really successfully is backing ideologies that also fit within the Dolly Parton mythology of love, kindness, acceptance, and doing the right thing by your fellow human beings. Parton's career has endured for over five decades, in large part because of her ability to stay above the fray when it comes to controversy. But it's not that Parton isn't outspoken or unflinching. Rather, it's the way in which she keeps some opinions close to the vest while pushing out a broader message that anyone can incorporate into their worldview, and doing so in a manner that seems very genuine and authentic to a diverse audience. And in a related article titled, Dolly Parton Blasts Politicians in New Song Says They Aren't Trying Hard Enough. This one in finance.yahoo.com by Carolyn Thayer on May 15, 2023. Dolly Parton has had about enough with today's politicians slamming legislators on both sides of the aisle in her new song, World on Fire. Straying away from her country roots and debuting her first ever rock single, Parton sings, "Don't get me started on politics. Now how are we going to live in a world like this? Greedy politicians present and past, they wouldn't know the truth if it bit them in the ass." Parton performed the song for the first time while co-hosting the ACM Awards last week. When asked what politician she was referencing, Parton flatly stated, "All of them, any of them. I don't think any of them are trying hard enough. I'm sure we're all trying, but I just really think, I think often that they worry more about their party than they do about the people," she elaborated in an interview on Today. Parton expanded on the frustration, noting she wished politicians would focus more on issues rather than optics. "If we just do what we felt was the right thing rather than who's going to lose or who's going to win this or who's going to look better if they do this. None of them are working from the heart." On Parton's website, the legendary musician explained what provoked her to write the song. "This is a song I felt very inspired to write. I think it speaks about everything and to everyone this day and time. I hope it is something that will touch you and maybe touch enough people to want to make a change for the better," she wrote. However, while Parton is discussing politics, no, she does not want to be political. According to Today journalist Jacob Soboroff, he explained that while it is well known Parton had previously turned down the Presidential Medal of Honor from former President Trump twice, she also told him that she had rejected the same honor from President Biden. Thank you. And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article titled, Why June 2023's Full Moon is Called the Strawberry Moon, and What It Will Look Like When It Lights Up the Sky. This is written by Christopher Brito on the 2nd of June 2023 in CBS News. Around the world, people could catch a sweet treat in the night sky this week, the strawberry moon. The strawberry moon is June's full moon. But why is it called the strawberry moon? According to the Old Farmer's Almanac, the name was used by Native American Algonquin tribes that live in the northeastern U.S. and Ojibwe, Dakota, and Lakota peoples. It was used to mark the ripening of strawberries ready to be gathered in June. Traditionally, the strawberry moon is the full moon in June, which is typically the last of spring or the first of summer. This full moon also has other names such as flower moon, hot moon, honeymoon, and rose moon, according to NASA. Since the strawberry moon is positioned lower in the sky in the northern hemisphere, the moon will appear to give a warmer light, Space.com reported. Therefore, it will look more yellow or orange in a way similar to sunsets. Prior to the strawberry moon, May's flower moon and April's pink moon took the sky. And following the celestial event, there will be four supermoons in a row, one in July, two in August, and one in September. Retired NASA astrophysicist Fred Espenak told Space.com, so keep your eyes on the night skies in the coming months. By the way, the almanac adds that the month of June is named for the Roman goddess Juno, patroness of marriage and the well-being of women, also from the Latin word juvenis, young people.
Your imagination is in an awful place. Don't believe in manifestation. Your heart will break.
The National, Your Mind Is Not Your Friend, introduces our rock and pop music news. It's a review of the National, More Pain, More Gain. The Brooklyn Sad Dad Kings return with one of their best albums yet. This is written by John Dolan, published in Rolling Stone magazine, May 2023 issue. On the National's almost too perfectly titled First Two Pages of Frankenstein, the undisputed kings of Brooklyn Sad Dad Rock are back together for the first time in 4 years and absolutely on point, delivering a record that will stand out as a dark gem in their catalog. The band has been off doing other things. Aaron and Bryce Dessner helped create a couple of landmark Taylor Swift albums. She pays them back with an appearance here. And singer Matt Berninger released his solo debut in 2020. Their renewed commitment to the National project is palpable. Eucalyptus is a gorgeous snapshot of a relationship's last intimate moments. With its electric groove, surging bass, and luminous guitar shadings, Tropic Morning News piles up genteel recrimination before lifting off into a beautiful, mind-clearing chorus. The detailed New Order t-shirt might be the most heart-splittingly pretty post-breakup remembrance of the band's career. As usual, their indie rock is refined with tasteful studio touches, an emphatic shared vocal uplift from Phoebe Bridgers on the ballad This Isn't Helping, making for an album where the gathering darkness feels more than ever like a comfort rather than a curse. I'm not doing anyone any kind of favors, Berninger informs us over the elegantly hesitant piano of Once Upon a Poolside, but the favor he does is the simple act of keeping the hard eggs coming. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, opus, is a word commonly seen with a composer's works, such as in Liszt, Opus 1. Why is that term not used in the plural? Is it A, this term is only used to identify the first work by a composer? Or is it B, the plural of this term is opera? Which would be confusing. Or is it C, there is no plural form of this particular term? Or is it D, this term is confined to compositions that have a libretto? Correct answer. Answer B, the plural of this term is opera, which would be confusing. As noted in a 10-8-2020 Reddit.com article titled, Why is opera plural of opus? For words that end with S, the S mutates to R in the plural form, as in opus, opera, acus, acera, decus, decora. This is because of an ancient shift predating Latin in which is S between two vowels become R. This is something that occurs not just in plurals, but in a great many cases. And the answer to our second question, it was on this very day in 1958 that Jerry Lee Lewis took out a full-page ad in Billboard magazine. Why did he do that? Was it A, to explain about his second divorce and his third marriage to his 14-year-old cousin? Was it B, to promote his candidacy for an elected office? Was it C, to announce the release of his newest album? Or was it D, to publicly declare bankruptcy? Correct answer? Answer A, to explain about his second divorce and his third marriage to his 14-year-old cousin. As noted in a 11-22-22 Billboard.com article by Joe Lynch, Jerry Lee Lewis, who died at the age of 87, shook America's nerves and rattled its brains. The December 22, 1956 issue of Billboard savored his debut single, Crazy Arms, as a flavored packed disc, and the magazine went on to track the rise of Whole Lot of Shaking Going On, and Great Balls of Fire, both of which scored on the country, R&B, and pop charts all at once. And as Elvis Presley turned his attention to Hollywood and then to the U.S. Army, Lewis seemed poised to vie for the king's throne until a British journalist learned that the girl accompanying him on his U.K. tour was his third wife, as well as his 13-year-old cousin. In the June 9, 1958 Billboard, the singer bought a full-page ad to pioneer a pop culture tradition, the half apology. I confess that my life has been stormy. I confess further that since I have become a public figure, I sincerely wanted to be worthy of the decent admiration of all the people, young and old, that admired or liked what talent, if any, I have, he wrote. I can't control the press or the sensationalism that these people will go to get a scandal started to sell papers. One big DJ backed him up. Jerry's a Southern boy, Alan Freed said, and Tennessee boys get married quite young. A week later, Billboard reviewed Lewis's New York club debut in less than glowing terms. Showmanship is not simply a matter of banging a piano and stomping around stage, griped the June 16, 1958 issue. The following edition, June 23, 1958, reported that Sun Records head Sam Phillips was servicing DJs a cute promotional disc, The Return of Jerry Lee. It makes light of the whole British episode, Phillips explained, which is the way we think the whole thing should be treated anyway. Lewis found a second life in Nashville, scoring four country number ones between 1968 and 1972. His hard living caught up with him, however, and in 1981 he was put in intensive care and underwent stomach surgery in Memphis. Lewis pulled through and performed at the Grand Ole Opry on December 3rd. Almost a quarter century after Billboard panned his New York concert, the December 25, 1981 issue called his return to action in Nashville an occasion tinged with awe. The verdict? He's nothing short of mesmerizing. Given June's strawberry full moon, let's close out today's program with Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.